Welcome to 5 Minutes to Midnight. My name is Mohammed Al-Dufani. In this episode, I'll be talking to Israeli human rights campaigner Miko Peled about Israeli Jewish attitudes towards the Palestinian people. But first, I'll start by giving some background to place the discussion in context. It's exactly 29 years since the Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat and Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin signed what are commonly known as the Oslo Accords. The Accords were aimed at achieving a peace treaty based on resolutions 242 and 338 of the United Nations Security Council, and at fulfilling the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. But nearly three decades later, we are further away from these aims than at any time, with the Accords having been used by Israel to buy time to colonize the occupied Palestinian territories with squatter settlements and thereby preclude any possibility of a viable and secure Palestinian entity in those territories. Proponents of the Oslo Accords see them as the cornerstone of a two-state solution. Israel in the territory occupied by the Zionist militias in 1948 on the one hand, and the Palestinian state in the post-1967 occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip on the other. Palestinians among those proponents tend to fall into two categories. Those who see a mini Palestinian state as the first step towards the transformation of Israel into a secular, democratic and multinational state, and those who consider it as an end in itself. However, if the utterances of Israel and the United States are to be taken at face value, then the Arafat-Rabin Accords will never lead to the creation of a Palestinian state. As the then American Secretary of State, Warren Christopher, said prior to the signing of the Accords, they did not include any provision for Palestinian statehood. He also stressed that the United States has never supported a Palestinian state. His remarks were echoed by the Israeli government, which said Tel Aviv remained opposed to the creation of an independent Palestinian state. Despite this, optimists among the Palestinians and others clung to the hope that the Accords would at least lead to a psychological breakthrough among Israeli Jews who, the optimists hoped, would eventually discard their racist view of the Palestinians as lesser beings or untermenschen and see them as a people deserving of all the civil and political rights that characterize the civilized world. But such hopes, it seems, are no more than a fantasy. An opinion poll conducted by Israel's Dialogue Group and reported by Britain's independent newspaper in October 2012 revealed that a majority of Israeli Jews believe that the Jewish state practices apartheid against the Palestinians, with many openly supporting discriminatory policies against the country's Arab citizens. A third of respondents believe that Israel's Arab citizens should be denied the vote, while almost half, 47%, would like to see them stripped of their citizenship rights. The poll found that 59% of those questioned would like to see Jews given preference for public sector jobs, while half would like to see Jews better treated than Arabs. It also found that over 40% would like to see separate housing and classrooms for Jews and Arabs. A more recent poll commissioned by the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem and published in April 2021, showed that attitudes have not improved and in some respects have gotten worse. With me in this episode is Israeli writer and human rights activist Miko Peled, who will share his insights of what Israeli Jews think of the Palestinians, peace and justice. With me in this episode is Israeli writer and human rights activist Miko Peled, who will share his insight of what Israeli Jews think of the Palestinians, peace and justice.
Welcome to our podcast, Miko Peled. First, tell us about your background. You grew up in a Zionist family, and your father, Matityahu Peled, was a general in the Israeli army. When and why did you begin your journey in support of Palestinian rights?
Well, thank you for having me on your podcast. It's a pleasure to speak to you. Like you said, my journey began from a very, very Zionist family. You know, the title of my first book, my memoir, is The General Son, because, like you said, my father was a general, and he was a general at a time where, the generals of that particular time, which is 1967, were considered like the gods of the Olympus in Israeli mentality and Israeli thinking. And what made these generals even more mythological is that they were young officers in 1948, and they were considered the heroes of 1948 because, according to the legend, thanks to them, the state of Israel was able to become a state, you know, in 1948. So, and I also had other members of my family who were instrumental in the establishing and the first few decades, the establishing of the state, and then, you know, being holding positions of importance within the state in the first few decades. I had an uncle who was a president. I had my grandfather sign the Declaration of Independence. And so that's a very, you know, like I said, it's a very patriotic upbringing, very patriotic background. And then just a little over 20 years ago, I began my, what I call in my book, The Journey of an Israeli in Palestine, which is basically my journey as the privileged, son and grandson of colonizers into the sphere, into the areas where Palestine still exists and where Palestinians actually live, which is a very, very different existence and a very different sphere, very different area, space than the ones I grew up in. Israelis grew up in these privileged ghettos within Palestine, and there's little to no connection and communication between the two sides, even though it's a very small country, and sometimes Israelis and Palestinians are only separated by a road. So, and then once I began this journey, and the more I traveled, the more I met Palestinians, both in the United States and, both in Palestine and the United States and, of course, other countries, my political thinking evolved to where it is, to where it is today, which is, decidedly anti-Zionist and completely rejecting the notion of the State of Israel.
Right, that's very interesting. How would you actually describe present-day Israeli Jewish attitudes towards the Palestinian people on either side of the Green Line? The findings of the Israeli dialogue polling group, which I mentioned in the intro, paint quite an ugly picture.
Well, first of all, there is no Green Line. And certainly in Israeli thinking, there is no green line. It's all Israel from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean, and that's that. And unfortunately, we have to deal with this, what they call hostile populations, some within what used to be the West Bank, some within the Palestinian citizens of Israel, because as I'm sure you know, Israel has divided Palestinians and governs Palestinians with different bureaucracies and different laws depending on where they reside.
Yeah.
So in terms of Israeli thinking, first of all, there is no green line. It's all Israel. Number two, Palestinians don't exist other than as some kind of a nuisance that has to be bombed from time to time. From time to time, they come and attack us for no reason. And so we have to go in there with our brave young men and women in uniform and teach them a lesson and punish them, whether it's in Gaza or in Jenin or in other places around the country. And that's, in terms of Israeli thinking, that's the only place in which Palestinians exist. And it actually takes up a very small space. Israelis live as though they are actually in some kind of a ghetto, some kind of a bubble within Palestine. They don't recognize that there's a Palestine. I think in many cases they don't even know that there's a Palestine, and they don't even know that the places where they live today, very recently, I mean, less than, you know, a quarter, less than a century ago, was a thriving Palestine, a thriving country called Palestine.
With me sitting over here, it's very hard for me to actually visualize this, because as you say, it's a very small country. So is there no concept of the injustice that has taken place at all, or of why the Palestinians actually, of their aspirations and of their desires, is there no concept at the popular level among Israeli Jews of this?
No, none whatsoever. Not in the media, not in society, and certainly not in the political sphere. Absolutely not. And anybody who dares to mention it is immediately labeled a traitor, an Arab lover. There's no existence for this. I just spent a month there. I just got back after being there for a month. I'm there a lot. I travel back and forth all the time. And yeah. this does not exist at all.
That is really appalling, and it's quite a revelation for me. Would you say that the cohesion of Israeli Jewish society is actually dependent on hatred or hostility towards the other, in this case the Palestinians? We know there are tensions in Israeli society, socio-economic ones, as well as tensions between religious Jews and the self-styled secular liberals. Would these tensions boil over to something more serious if the conflict with the Palestinians were to be resolved?
I don't know. I mean, I've heard this theory. You know, this theory has been in existence for many, many years. Every immigrant society, and every certainly every colonial society that has, you know, the levels within a society, socioeconomic levels within their society, has problems and has differences. I think they somehow manage to exist one way or another. Who knows? I mean, it's all theoretical. I mean, the Palestinians do exist. This idea that somehow we need to fight and be strong and united does exist. It doesn't cover up the problems. The problems exist. Many Israelis realize it. It's very obvious that if you're from European descent, you have more privilege and more access to resources than if you are from, and of course, the darker your skin, the lower you are on the social strata, the lower you are on the totem pole, if you will. That's the reality, but I don't think that's unique to Israel. That's how it is in all settler colonial societies. Who knows what would have happened if there was no Palestinian issue? I mean, it's really a very theoretical kind of a question that it's impossible to answer.
Yeah. I mean, my next question, I suppose you've answered it in a way. And basically, it was about the attitudes, the racist or the hostile attitudes towards the Palestinians. So they're not just prevalent among the settlers, they are also amongst the liberal community, Jewish liberal community in places like Tel Aviv? Is that the case?
Well, let me just kind of reframe the question. First of all, there are no Israelis that are not settlers. All Israelis are settlers.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether they live in Tel Aviv or whether they live in Hebron, they're all settlers. There's no such thing as Israelis that are not settlers.
Yeah.
No Israelis are indigenous to Palestine. We're all settlers, we're all colonizers, and we're the descendants, the children and grandchildren. So it's been going on for several generations. There is a real unification between what used to be liberals. There are no liberals in Israeli society. You cannot be a liberal and maintain your identity as a Zionist and Israeli.
Yeah.
It's an oxymoron. And there's a very, very strong campaign, which is very successful, to bring what they called, you know, to bring everybody together, you know, both the ones that are the more Tel Aviv, more perhaps maybe socially somewhat more liberal, and the ones who are more religious, what's called the national religious movement, which are the settlers you're referring to, which are the West Bank settlers.
Yeah.
Which are politically and seem to be more fanatic. And there's a real bringing together of these parts of society, and it's very, very successful. I mean, today one of the most popular politicians, Itamar Ben-Gvir, who was a punk, you know, he's a delinquent who grew up, who was adopted, kind of really taken under the wing of the most radical right-wing, you know, a form of Zionism, which was led by a guy called Meir Kahana back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Today, Ben Gvir is a lawyer, and he, of course, he's a rabid, racist, violent, hate-filled lunatic, but he is a member of the Knesset. He is a very popular figure in Israeli politics and in the media. He is, you know, he may well be running the table after the next elections. The polls from you show that he's going to have a significant number of seats. His party is going to get a significant number of seats. And so, yes, this attitude, this particular attitude or non-attitude, I should say, towards the Palestinians or the existence of Palestinians is true across the board. There is no liberal kind of peace-loving Israeli movement.
That's very interesting, because in many ways, or totally, it goes against what people like Yuri Avneri and the Gush Shalom or peace bloc in Israel say. They've always made a distinction between the West Bank settlers, the religious fanatics on the one hand, and people elsewhere, like in places like Tel Aviv. But what you're telling me is that this is really a bit of a myth.
Yes, I mean, it's very convenient. I mean, Uri Avneri, I knew him. He worked closely with my father. He was politically the same, you know, that they shared the same ideology politically. They were what they tried to call themselves, kind of Zionist left or liberal Zionist, but it was always Zionist first. And it's very convenient for them to look at the settlers in the West Bank, blame them for the problems, and ignore the fact that they were sitting on stolen Palestinian land, and that in fact, what they consider to be the legitimate part of Israel is actually the lion's share of occupied Palestine.
Yeah, yeah.
So they wanted to erase the crimes of 1948. They wanted to forget or ignore the fact that the lion's share of Palestine was occupied by them in 1948, because they wanted to keep that. They wanted to keep the spoils of 1948, and then just blame this new generation of religious Zionists who went into the West Bank and say, "Well, see, they're the problem." But it's complete hypocrisy. It's a completely hypocritical perspective. The reason this strange being, this Zionist left, Uri Avneri brand of Zionist left, is gone, and I think he was the last one. You know, he passed away a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Is because you cannot live in this. You know what I mean? You can't live in this reality where you consider yourself a Zionist and also consider yourself left. You cannot live within that, because Zionism is a radical right wing, racist, violent, settler colonial ideology. To call yourself left within that is really a joke.
Yeah. Thank you. Any of you, what would it take to change Israeli views of the Palestinian people and persuade Israelis of the urgent need for a just solution that meets Palestinian national aspirations?
Nothing. There's nothing can be done to convince Israelis. The only thing that can be done is to bring Israeli society to their knees, like was done with white South African society. Bring them to their knees through severe sanctions, closure of all diplomatic missions, ending all trade and all commerce, making sure that Israel is not permitted to participate in the Olympics, in the World Cup, in any athletic or academic or cultural spaces at all. Bring Israeli society to their knees. They won't be convinced, but they'll be forced.
Yeah. Yeah.
To understand that this can no longer continue. Until that happens, you know, there's no convincing that could possibly work.
And we're talking about the total boycott of Israel, not just of the West Bank, as some people who advocate the boycott talk about at the moment.
No, that's a joke. There is no West Bank.
That's right.
West Bank, it only exists as a figment of people's imagination in old maps.
Yeah.
You know, there's no such thing as West Bank. It's all Israel. The Israeli cities and towns that exist within what was the West Bank are considered part of Judea and Samaria. They're completely legitimized. Israeli citizens live there, Israeli Jews. The only thing that exists from that pre-1967 reality is the status of the Palestinians who live in the pre-1967 borders.
Yeah.
They have a different status than the ones who reside within what used to be the West Bank. And the reason for that is because this allows Israel to portray itself and present itself as a Jewish majority democracy. Because what it allows Israel to do is only count the Palestinian citizens of Israel. In other words, only count the Palestinians who reside in the pre-67 borders. And so if you count only them, and you count all the Jews, all the Jewish Israelis, yeah, then they make up about 20%, and you can present Israel as a a democratic Jewish state with a Palestinian, or as they like to call it, Arab minority. Whereas if we look at the entire country, and disregard this strange strange division that Israel created, what we see is a state that has that governs all of historic Palestine, in which Palestinians are the majority and Israeli Jews are the minority, only they hold all the privilege and the access to resources. And that's not a picture Israel wants to portray. So that is the only thing it keeps. But other than that, there's no West Bank. There are cities and towns and highways throughout what they call Judea and Samaria, and that's it. I mean, when you think about it, Israel created, drew the West Bank. But there's no West Bank before 1948. The West Bank is not part of Palestine that was ever defined.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody sat there with a piece of paper and a pencil and drew it.
Yeah.
And then they erased it when it was convenient for them to erase it.
Yeah. Right. My final question is about the Israeli understanding of peace. An Israeli Jewish acquaintance of mine once told me that when Israelis talk about peace, they mean peace and quiet for themselves, not necessarily for their neighbors, especially the Palestinians. How true is that?
That's very true. That's very true. All Israelis want is peace and quiet, and if it means they have to drop a few tons of bombs, a few hundred tons of bombs on Gaza every so often, so be it. It's no skin off their nose. And if it means that they have to invest in a military, which they love anyway and adore anyway, that will go in and kill young fighters in Jenin and Nablus and other places. And if it means they have to have thousands of political prisoners, so be it. It's a small price to pay for peace and quiet. There is no concept of, having normalized relations with other Arab countries, which of course they'd love to do. Your friend was absolutely right.
Well, that is an extremely depressing picture. We end up, every episode of this podcast ends up with a very depressing note.
Well, you know what? Let me say this then. If people want to see change, they have to bring it about.
Yes.
If we want to see change, I think it's very likely that there will be elections in the UK before long. People need to speak to their representatives and say, look, if you're going to support Israel, we won't vote for you. If you're going to support these regimes that are non-democratic and oppressive, we're not going to vote for you. Same thing here in the United States. There are midterm elections coming up later this year. And, change does not come from some, Salah al-Din or the Mahdi showing up suddenly.
Yes, exactly.
Change will come from every single one of us acting with passion and acting in a way that is absolutely, absolutely uncompromising. That's how we bring about change. And so if we want to see change, if we want to be optimistic, then we need to get up every morning and do something to bring about the change that we want to see. So in a way, it is optimistic because it's up to us. We do have the strength. We do have the power. We did bring, topple the apartheid regime in South Africa. So, I mean, there are places where people spoke and were successful. So it's up to us.
That is very true. I mean, I've been in the UK for a long time. And when I compare attitudes in the 1970s to attitudes now, there's been a sea change, but unfortunately it's not radical enough to actually to translate itself at the political level. As you say, more needs to be done, and people need to impress upon their representatives that if they want their votes, then they have to vote for justice. They have to go for justice.
Yeah.
That was Israeli writer and human rights campaigner Miko Peled talking to me, Mohammed Al-Dufani, on 5 minutes to midnight about Israeli Jewish attitudes towards the Palestinian people, peace and justice.